I'm Owen Jensen. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, divided decision. The Supreme Court rules 5-4 to lift a blanket block on all deportations related to the Alien Enemies Act. But it is not without a caveat. A holy mission. Catholic Vote founder Brian Birch is on Capitol Hill as he hopes to be confirmed as President Trump's ambassador to the Holy See. Talking it over, the Trump administration is directly negotiating with Iran over its nuclear program. We have analysis. Plus, a somber anniversary. We take a look back 20 years after the burial of Pope St. John Paul II. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you very much for being with us. I'm Owen Jensen. Our top story tonight, stocks started in the green today, but ended in the red after another roller coaster day on Wall Street. Members of the Trump administration, including the U.S. Trade Representative, insist things are moving in the right direction.
Several of these countries, such as Argentina, Vietnam, India, and Israel, have suggested that they will reduce their tariffs and non-tariff barriers in line with the president's policy. And these obviously are welcome moves.
Jameson Greer testified today in front of the Senate Finance Committee as investors grappled with the uncertainty of President Trump's trade war, which is set to kick into high gear after midnight tonight. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump is celebrating a Supreme Court ruling that allows his administration to keep using the Alien Enemies Act to deport Venezuelan migrants accused of being gang members. But the justices also ruled the suspects must be given the chance to legally fight any deportation orders.
The Supreme Court decision gives both President Donald Trump and his opponents reason to claim victory. Trump writes, "The Supreme Court has upheld the rule of law in our nation by allowing a president, whoever that may be, to be able to secure our borders and protect our families and our country itself." He calls it a great day for justice in America.
We believe this was a massive victory. Certainly we wish this was a 9-0 decision because we firmly believe that the president was well within his constitutional authority, and the Supreme Court made that very clear last night.
The ruling came after the Trump administration deported more than 130 suspected gang members to El Salvador, arguing they were part of an invading force. Attorney General Pam Bondi promises the crackdown will continue.
They are foreign adversaries, they are terrorists, and they are living among us no longer. And especially after that ruling yesterday, they better start self-deporting because we're coming after them.
The Supreme Court says the men involved in the case have the right to challenge the use of the Alien Enemies Act. They just have to do so in the district where they're detained. The ACLU calls it an important victory.
They actually, as a practical matter, can get to the courts and not be whisked away in the middle of the night like was originally done in this case.
Another ruling from the Supreme Court involves a Maryland man mistakenly deported to El Salvador.
That they can whisk someone out of the country by accident and then have no responsibility to fix, you know, what they've broken just doesn't make sense as a legal matter and is also just disturbing as a matter of constitutional law.
But the justices say the U.S. does not have to bring him back for now.
First of all, it was an administrative error as to why he was deported, and he is a known gang member.
The man's attorneys dispute that claim.
And the Supreme Court also weighed in on another case, this one involving thousands of probationary federal employees who were let go in mass firings. The High Court's decision blocks a lower court ruling that required the federal government to temporarily reinstate more than 16,000 probationary employees. Now, this order will keep employees in six federal agencies on paid administrative leave for now. The Trump administration may soon have its chief diplomat at the Vatican. The post has been vacant since the president took office in January. President Trump nominated Brian Birch, president and co-founder of Catholic Vote, to be U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. Today, Birch answered questions during his confirmation hearing before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more. Eric.
Hey, good evening, Owen. A little history lesson here. Formal diplomatic relations with the Holy See were established back in 1984 by then President Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II. The mission works in partnership with the Holy See on global issues, including democracy, peace and security, along with foreign aid and human rights. Now, before the hearing, a number of Catholic leaders told me that Brian Birch is the right man for the job.
It's important we have the Voice of America. in the Holy See, in the diplomatic corps. There are many issues. Brian will do a great job. There's no doubt.
Foreign Relations Committee member Texas Senator John Cornyn says people of all faiths listen to the Pope.
He speaks to the values that I think many of us share, if not all. So I think it's important to have an effective representative of the president as ambassador to the Holy See.
In his opening statement, Birch touched on the global challenges facing the U.S.
Working to resolve war and conflict in multiple regions around the world, religious persecution, the exploitation of the poor and vulnerable, the scourge of human trafficking, and the defense and promotion of human dignity and prosperity.
And the threats from China.
I think it's important to maintain, for the Holy See to maintain a posture of pressure and of applying pressure to the Chinese government around their human rights abuses, particularly their persecution of religious minorities, including Catholics.
Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen questioned Birch on the impact of President Trump's recent cuts to foreign aid.
How will you reassure the Holy See that the United States really is committed to saving the lives of those in need and to preventing suffering around the world?
Millions, if not billions, of our dollars have been going to places around the world that are not aligned with United States interests. And the Secretary has made clear when he took office that he was recharting and refocusing our foreign aid on places that would make America safer, stronger, and more prosperous.
It is important to note that confirmation still has to be approved by the Foreign Relations Committee, and then it will go before the Senate floor for a full confirmation vote. That's expected to happen in a few weeks, and I'll keep you updated. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, Eric, thank you. Now to the Dominican Republic. Crews are searching for any possible survivors after a roof collapsed at a nightclub. Take a look at this video moments before the collapse. Among the 160 people injured, a singer who was in the middle of his performance at the time of this horrific, deadly incident. His saxophonist was killed as a result, along with dozens of other people. Authorities believe many people may still be trapped under that rubble. Kentucky residents are anxious to return to their flooded homes to see what's left after days of storms and heavy rains overfilled rivers to near record levels. The Kentucky governor is urging patience and caution. Flood danger remains high in other states, including parts of Tennessee, Arkansas, and Indiana. Officials warned of flooding expected along the Ohio River in Henderson and Owensboro in the next week, with swift water rescue teams at the ready. Several people have died in multiple states, including Kentucky, where a 9-year-old boy was caught up in floodwaters while walking to catch his school bus. It's the latest severe weather to cause deaths and widespread damage in Kentucky. Joining us now is Dr. Shelley Gregory, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Lexington, Kentucky. Shelley, thank you very much for joining us. I know it's a very difficult time for you and the folks in Kentucky, and our hearts and go out to you, our prayers, thoughts. Please, if you would, bring us up to speed what you're seeing right now around you in Kentucky.
Absolutely. So we had flooding that occurred back in February, and we have 16 active declarations in counties, mostly in central and eastern Kentucky from February. So we are active already in recovery. Most of those homes have already been mucked out, and we're looking at long-term recovery that we're working on with those folks. Then, just a few days ago, we got hit with historic flooding in mostly northern, central, and western Kentucky. So we have several more counties and cities that are working on declarations, but they have not been awarded yet. But we have 67 counties as of last night that have written declarations to turn into FEMA, and then 34 city declarations. So those are mostly run along the Ohio River and the rivers that run into those.
So a lot of people impacted, a widespread area. How is Catholic Charities helping folks there impacted by the flooding?
So Catholic Charities nationwide is known for disaster relief. But what happens when a disaster hits is that many organizations flood into the area and help out. So right now we have Red Cross on the ground, Salvation Army, things like Samaritan's Purse, Team Rubicon, Reach Out Worldwide. All of these, they come in and do that initial search and rescue, the emergency management folks, and we help them where we can, but we mostly then step in later when it's time for the long-term recovery. And we help out with repairs and supplies for those long-term recovery.
What are some of the biggest needs people have right now? What can Americans living around the country, seeing these devastating pictures come across their TV and computer screens, what can they do to help? So biggest needs and what can people do to help?
The biggest needs right now are going to be, I think they're still doing some search and recovery, but then just the muck outs and cleanup. So the items they need for those are, things like fans and squeegees and buckets, all of those type of things. We are moving some of those supplies that we collected from the February floods from Eastern Kentucky westward. So we're moving those around, but they're going to need more of those. But anytime a disaster like this hits, the best thing that you can do is make monetary donations. That's where we can get the money used to what is needed.
That's a lot for people to endure in just a few months. February now, April, boy, our hearts again go out to you, and we're praying for you, and Godspeed. Okay, Shelley?
Thank you so much.
All right, take care and good luck.
Thank you.
We have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including deadly strikes, dozens more killed in Gaza over a 24-hour period. And the U.S. and Iran are holding nuclear talks very soon, but is there space for a deal? Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip overnight killed at least 25 people, including women and children. That's according to Palestinian medics. A ceasefire ended in March. Israel has vowed to escalate the war until Hamas returns dozens of remaining hostages, disarms, and leaves the territory. Israel says it only targets militants and blames Hamas for civilian deaths because it operates in densely populated areas. Iran's foreign minister confirmed today he will meet with U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff this weekend for indirect talks on a possible new nuclear deal. Yet that seemed to contradict President Trump's assertion of the negotiations.
We're having direct talks with Iran, and they've started. It'll go on Saturday. We have a very big meeting, and we'll see what can happen. But it's getting to be very dangerous territory, and hopefully those talks will be successful, and I think it would be in Iran's best interests if they are successful.
Direct or indirect, the talks represent a breakthrough between the U.S. and Iran. Let's discuss this with retired Colonel William Dunn. He is the president of Strategic Resilience Group, LLC, a company he founded after spending 33 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. He's also the author of Gunfighters Rule, the story of a boy destined to become a U.S. Marine. Sir, thank you very much for joining us. My first question to you is, why the debate and discussion over whether the talks are direct or indirect? What impact does that have on any of this?
Well, thanks very much for having me. And I don't know that how the talks are held has as much impact as the fact that we are absolutely having talks. That's very important. There is extreme unrest in concerns in the Middle East and what could happen. There's concerns what would happen if Iran does possess a nuclear weapon. And there's concern of what our ally Israel would do if that were to take place. We need to avoid that at all costs. Talks, indirect or direct, are going to hopefully help prevent us coming to what I consider a cataclysmic problem where we're doing another fight, another war in another country. We don't need that. They don't need that. And the best way to prevent that is with good, solid communication.
Steve Witkoff has a mighty big job. Those talks start this Saturday, direct or indirect, however you want to characterize them. But what is Steve Witkoff's main job going into Saturday with Iran?
Well, I won't speak for Steve. I don't personally know him, but I would think what I would do if I was in his shoes, the first thing I would do is demonstrate a fact that we do not want to go onto a path for war. It's better to have a path for negotiation, a path for calm, But then I would be very stern and explain and remind them that right now, Iranian-backed Houthis are attacking U.S. ships. They need to be held accountable for that. The Houthis themselves, I think we had over 30 strikes today. I hope they continue. We cannot have an entity shooting and putting American lives at risk of our men and women overseas, as well as our allies in free shipping lanes. So we need to stop that. But I would go in there with that. But I wouldn't go in there, you know, I wouldn't go in there like Raging Bull. I'd come back a little bit and try to make it a friendly scenario until it no longer can be one, and then make them understand American might, it will stop this aggression.
Let me ask you this. So the talks, sounds like Oman will mediate the talks. So why them, and how do they influence the dynamic between the U.S. and Iran?
Well, I think it's a neutral country out there. I've spent a good bit of time in Oman during my Marine Corps deployments. Great place. I think they're looking for, I don't want to necessarily call Oman completely neutral, but they're looking for a place where both sides can probably feel comfortable in not demonstrating maybe what we don't know is what Iran is telling their population and how the Iranian population will see these talks. They don't have as quite free access to internet and TV and news as we do. I don't know the depth of that, but I suspect they're going to tell their folks one thing, and then something will take place in those talks in Oman.
The goal in all of this, obviously, is so that Iran cannot possess a nuclear weapon. I read stories all the time how close they are to having one, or, you know, whether it's one or two or six. Or do you believe, in your assessment, after everything you've looked at and seen, how close are they? When could they have one? Do you think they'll get one eventually?
Well, okay, that's a tough question. Whether we think they're going to get one or not, they can never get one. And I would suggest that these talks may be in line with the fact that we think they're getting close to getting one. I don't know that. I know our intel folks that are doing this at the highest levels of security would understand that. They cannot have one because they've already told us, they've told the world what they will do as soon as they get one. So what we do not want, and I would hope that every Iranian citizen does not want this, we never want this world to cross the nuclear threshold and have one country shoot at least one or more nuclear weapons at another. We do not want that. We need to prevent that for the future of our world and the future of our children. And I think that needs to be the focus. Iran does not need a nuclear weapon. The only reason why they want one is to destroy Israel. And so they have to understand that that will never happen, and they need to understand the ramifications if they do or try.
And finally, we're wrapping up here quickly, but the war in the Middle East, you know, a year and a half now, Israel fighting Hamas. Sir, do you see that coming to an end anytime soon?
I do not, unfortunately. The first time that, you know, as a brand new Marine in 1983, the Hezbollah blew up the Beirut hospital or Beirut airport, killing 241 Marine sailors and soldiers. And from that point on, there's been unrest in the Middle East. And before that, right? It's been there forever. We're not going to solve it. We need to solve it one piece at a time. Getting these hostages back would be a step. It would stop, I believe, the bombing campaign from Israel immediately if they did that. I would hope, and the problem is they're not maybe rational actors. You would just hope they would let those hostages go, stop the bombing, and reset. It won't be peace in my mind. It'll just delay the next conflict. But the more and longer peace we have, the more stability we have, the better we can all get along.
We need more peace, that's for sure. Colonel William Dunn, thank you very much for your time, sir. And thanks for your service in the Marines.
Well, yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me, and have a wonderful night.
All right, take care. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Words on Fire. Catholic University of America announces who will deliver the 2025 commencement address. Plus, scary story here, a stray bullet striking a newly dedicated Catholic chapel in Detroit, Michigan. Stick around. Welcome back. An end of an era is coming to the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, as Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Archbishop Joseph Naumann. Throughout his tenure as Archbishop since 2004, the 75-year-old Naumann has been an outspoken and dedicated voice for the unborn. For 3 years, he served as chair for the USCCB Pro-Life Committee from 2018 to 2021. And in Kansas, he has fought tirelessly for the pro-life cause. In fact, his papal motto is Vide Victoria Erit, life will be victorious. Replacing Archbishop Nauman will be 56-year-old Archbishop-elect Sean McKnight, currently the Bishop of Jefferson City in Missouri. Pope Francis also appointed today 57-year-old Bishop Bruce Lewandowski, an auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, as the new head of the Diocese of Providence, Rhode Island. Providence has been without a bishop since October of last year, when Bishop Richard Henning became the Archbishop of Boston. The Catholic University of America announces its commencement speaker for 2025. Bishop Robert Barron will do the honors. His Excellency is the founder of Word on Fire Catholic Ministries and Bishop of Winona, Rochester. He's also an alumnus of Catholic University of America. The graduation ceremony is set for May 17th. A scary scene in Detroit, Michigan, as a stray bullet strikes a newly dedicated Catholic high school chapel. Police say the bullet breached St. Peter Claver Chapel at Loyola High School on Monday morning due to a shooting in northwest Detroit. There were no reported injuries, thankfully, and police are searching for more details about the incident. The all-boys school dedicated the new chapel last week. The Archdiocese says it is the first Catholic worship space constructed in Detroit since the mid-1960s. 20 years ago today, millions of faithful came together in Rome for the funeral of Pope St. John Paul II.
È realmente andato ovunque ed instancabilmente.
Besides nearly 3 million pilgrims, the funeral gathered kings, queens, prime ministers, and presidents like George W. Bush from all over the globe, making it one of the largest gatherings of statesmen and world leaders in history. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger celebrated the Mass, entrusting John Paul II's soul to the Mother of God. Pope Francis remains in stable condition following his surprise visit to St. Peter's Square on Sunday. The Holy See Press Office tells reporters the Holy Father is still showing further signs of improvement as he recovers from pneumonia. Joining us now from Rome is Frank Rocca, Senior Vatican Analyst for EWTN News. Frank, what's the latest from the Vatican about Pope Francis's health?
Well, we can sum up today's statement as no news is good news. They said, the Vatican came out right away and said there are no medical updates, and they described the situation as stable. They said he's still having more slight improvements in his voice and mobility. He's getting oxygen therapy, physical therapy, respiratory therapy, pharmaceuticals. His lung infection is still there, but it's decreasing. So slow and steady progress. This is the new normal, but this is a good place to be when we can imagine a month ago or a little bit more than a month ago how dire things looked. It's astonishing to think that this is just getting better and a little better every day.
Absolutely. Frank, did we learn anything new?
Well, we did learn a little bit. They mentioned that he's taking some visitors. They didn't say how many, but they mentioned that the Cardinal Secretary of State, Cardinal Parolin, came and visited him yesterday. So that's another good sign. They said, you know, he kind of celebrates Mass every day, and that he's calling the church in Gaza, the Catholic Church in Gaza that he called from the beginning of the war, he's calling them regularly, but not every day. So again, we get a picture of him with increasing activity, not back to what he was before yet, but moving there.
And Frank, finally, any chance the Pope will play a role in celebrations for Holy Week and Easter?
Well, and interesting, the way they put it today, they said any decisions about Holy Week are going to be made at the last minute, which is an interesting way to put it, and I think it's a good sign, because otherwise they could just simply say, no, he's not going to be well enough. And I think we got a surprise on Sunday. They had hinted that we might see him and get a glimpse of him. But in fact, as you know, he came out in his wheelchair into the square and greeted people. So maybe we can hope for something like that in Holy Week and Easter.
Well, we continue to pray for the Holy Father's good health and convalescence. Frank, thank you very much.
Thank you, Owen.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Owen Jensen. Good night. God bless.